he said to me, if a country doesn't have an identity, which we don't, how can you ask people to integrate into it? Good question. He said, what are you asking them to integrate into? They don't, you don't have a set of values. Your only values are hating white people, which is like, and then the other thing.
But we do have a set of values. We do have an identity. Our identity is it's a Christian nation. Our values are Christian values. They're just a metropolitan liberal elite who want to deny that and ignore that. But this is why people haven't integrated.
Welcome to another episode of Fox and Father, where I'm the fox and he is
the father.
Yeah, he's left me as well. No, don't start. Where are you?
I am in Michigan and it's lovely. I'm in the land of the free and the home of the brave, and it feels like it.
I've noticed you've been using your free speech recently, Calvin.
I'm not racist. I just don't like them.
How are you, bro? I miss you.
I'm good. I miss you too. I saw you tweeted those glasses. I left a glass. You'll have to fly over and bring it with you.
I will. How's it gone? How's the arrival process? How do you feel? What's going on?
Good. Getting there. So the rectory is under refurbishment. The bathroom and the kitchen are being redone. And they're building a bed as we speak. So it's all under works. I'm staying with a lovely parishioner at the moment up in the sticks. There's plenty of room to shoot around here. I think we're going shooting on Friday. I've been eating lots of American food, but I've been going to the gym. So I went straight to the gym because I thought I'm going to explode otherwise out here. And it's just good. It just feels good.
What's the biggest thing you've noticed, the biggest change?
Less malaise, less negativity. People are just getting on with their lives without the government trying to impede on every single element of their lives. It's actually sunny out here as well at the moment, which is nice. But just feel the vibe of the place is different.
And do you feel personally that does it already feel like a good decision, or are you still in a sort of like wobbly place about, you know, all the stuff that you had to do to actually leave a country?
No, it feels great. It feels exactly right. It feels like I'm in the right place at the right time. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is where I'm called to be. Like, as soon as I landed, it's like a weight was lifted off my shoulders.
They're going to love you there. They literally are like, Britain's lost, mate. You know, we've got someone who will actually speak their mind and speak the truth. It's amazing. I mean, I'm really annoyed with you, as you can tell, but, you know, that will pass in time as well. So you're doing well. You're in. How you went on, when did you go? Sunday. So you're day three.
Yeah, third full day. I'm just getting over the jet lag, but it doesn't take long, does it? But I'm going out, some nice places, meeting good people, lots of sound services around here. There's lots of good Christians around here. It's just ordinary life, how it used to be. Of course, a lot of it is going to be novelty. Of course it will, but it's good to get out of London, get away from the tyranny of Starmer and his two-tiered system. Although I did say I was in the UK papers. Was it today or yesterday? With the
when fucking Andrews.
Yeah, the Lord.
Can I just? We got something in common here.
What?
I was in Wood Green Police Station today, pursuing Narinder Kaur under Section 128.
No way.
Yeah. So she called me a sex criminal.
She did.
Yeah. She did. So I went and gave a statement today.
Good.
To the police, and I've said that it was deeply, deeply harmful for me. It affected my kids. My kids came home and said, are you like a rapist or something? I'm like, no. So I'm going to go. I'm going to make sure that this defamation stuff is rubbish because it's all political.
Of course.
Criminals, crimes are crimes. And if she's busted 128, the Communications Act, then they've got to investigate her for it. because that's what we pay them for. And I think what you did with Kinde Andrews is exactly right. I think it's the right thing to do. How dare someone think that just because they're brown, they get to walk around being racist scumbags? I find it appalling. And I'm so pleased you did it, because it's courageous, you see. It's what you're always looking for. You're going, let's do this, let's actually fight back. And no one's got the balls to do it except you and me now, because I'm going to, you know...
Well, in fact, you're doing it as well, because the last time, you know, you called someone a paedophile, you had to pay them, what was it, £95,000? So hopefully Narendra will have to do the same for you.
I had to pay these little deviants, which is what I think they
careful.
Are. Well, now I can say someone's deviant. That's not a crime. You can be deviant of mind, you can be deviant of body, you can be deviant of anything. If someone called me a deviant, it's fine. That's free speech, right? It's not, I'm not accusing you of anything. They got paid the same amount of money as you would get if you were, if you lost a leg.
It's ridiculous.
In an industrial accident.
And but I guarantee you won't get the same from Narendra. No way.
I don't want anything from Narendra. I want to know what it's like to feel the touch of the law. Because you walk around for engagement and clicks and trying to ruin someone's life.
It's not about what you want, though. It's about the justice system, isn't it? It's about equality under the law. It's about the fact that if it happens one way, it should happen the other way, exactly the same. But it won't, of course.
We don't have an equal justice system. Farage said it in Parliament today.
He did. And this is why I'm doing the Kinde thing. You know, I just found a clip of him in 2021 admitting to being racist on national television, just smirking at me. Like, we let these people get away with it for so long. You tweeted about it, didn't you? The anti-racists are just racist with anti in front. Exactly that. And he's put out a statement in The Independent, which, by the way, I refuse to comment on because they are just a leftist rag looking to bait me. But he put out a statement saying, how can I be racist? I'm black. You know, how can the police come and question me? I'm a professor of black studies. They don't they don't respect my field. Like, no, because it's not a real field. It's not a real job. Yeah. And anyone could be racist.
It's so true. It's like, the minute you make it, you create some bullshit structure of going, only white people can be racist, then all of the brown racists are going to go, it's free pass. I can be a racist. You know, it's so silly. And also, people like Kinde Andrews, his ideas, him as a person, should just be loved and nurtured and all that sort of stuff. But his ideas should be stamped into oblivion.
100%. Like,
into oblivion. He should be mocked. His ideas, not him, his ideas should be mocked, ridiculed, and taken down relentlessly, day after day after day, until he's a laughingstock. Because that's what he is. He's a racist laughingstock, in my opinion. That's what he is. So I'm really pleased that you went after him, and I've now gone after Narendra Kaur, and I'm going to go, okay, fine, you've been using, I sit at night waiting for the police to come and knock on my door, or in the morning, you should. I've never called you a sex criminal. I've never even attacked you. I rhetorically devised calling people a paedophile when they called me a racist, and it cost an arm and a leg. And I'm like, okay, you insist there's no two-tier justice system, no two-tier policing system in this country. Show me. Prove it.
So we'll use their own weapons against them. Use their own weapons against them, and then get them afraid of the system until they realize that it's corrupt and they have to change it. It's always the left that corrupt our systems in the first place.
They do. So I want to talk to you about something.
Okay.
I met a guy called Sahail Ahmed today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I suggest everyone follows him.
He's a former Mohammedan, right?
Let me get into it a bit.
Okay.
So I sat down and I said, tell me your story. And he said, I was raised on the 20th floor of a tower block in Leytonstone. Leyton. And he said, his mum and dad got married, everything was fine. Then they'd met another family in the tower block who were Wahhabi Salafists, and everything changed. So mum started covering up to the point where she covered her entire face. Right. And they were taught in the local mosque. So this is in London. This is happening. They were taught in the local mosques about becoming martyrs, about dying for the cause, about the fact that all Christians wanted to murder them and all that sort of stuff. And he became an extremist to the point where he was planning to do some pretty horrible things. Anyway, he decided against it because he could see the hypocrisy of the whole thing. And he decided against it. So he left Islam. And now, and this is what I want to get your take on, because this is where I think you and I will disagree. Now he has said, I've come back to Islam, but I've come back to Islam as a reformer. As someone who says the hadith, of which apparently, I mean, I'm no religious scholar, but he says you've got the Quran, I don't know how you say it, but he was saying it a lot. He said, you've got that. And then all the hadith, he said, could fill up an entire library.
Yes.
And it was 1,000 years beyond Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just like stories told to people in a park bench, hearsay, Chinese whispers, I think was how he used it. And he said that needs to be dispensed with.
Okay.
And you should be able to mock the Prophet Muhammad. You should, as part of a free speech exercise. You should be able to criticize religions. You should be able to do. And I was like, I'm totally on board. And I found this whole idea of his religion became a separate entity, because we were talking about values. And I said, you know, Christians are the same. We're trying to spread the word and all that sort of stuff. But he said some really interesting things. He said to me, if a country doesn't have an identity, which we don't, how can you ask people to integrate into it? Good question. He said, what are you asking them to integrate into? You don't have a set of values. Your only values are hating white people, which is like, and then the other thing.
But we do have a set of values. We do have an identity. Our identity is a Christian nation. Our values are Christian values. They're just a metropolitan liberal elite who want to deny that and ignore that. But this is why people haven't integrated.
But what I really liked about him was he was courageous. He's really courageous. You know, steps away from the faith, comes back to the faith. But he says, I have to come back to it. He used a great example, which was in either the Quran or the Hadith. I can't remember now. It says, if you go to a host nation, you cannot wage war against them. You've got to obey their laws. And then some Salafist scholar turns around and goes, yeah, but that only applies to the first generation. So the second generation can kill and murder and maim in the name of Islam and jihad and all that stuff. And he was really interesting about a lot of the flags that are getting flown at these Islamic rallies. He said those flags are active calls for violent jihad.
Yeah.
In this country. So, you know, I don't read Arabic, I don't understand it. But what I thought was, one of the things I want to do, because I've always said, shut the borders, start talking about assimilation and integration. Like, the conversation has developed further to mass deportations, which I think is a really good conversation. And we should deport huge numbers of people who are a burden on our system. Mm-hmm. But I look at this guy as a really interesting example of, and he described himself, he said, only about 0.5% of Muslims believe what I believe. And I said, but that's a great place to start from. You've got 0.5% of the population of on your side. And I sort of pushing him and asking him about, you know, tolerance towards homosexuality, because obviously you're probably aligned on that one. Not in the fact that you, but he was sort of saying, you know, stoning people to death, that's not a good thing. The age of sexual consent is a really bad thing. Blasphemy laws are a terrible thing. Inter-couple marriage is a terrible thing. He was telling me that someone has done a huge amount of study into what the National Health Service spends on first cousin marriages from Pakistani families.
Oh, yeah.
And it's enormous. And then they bury it because they're worried about being called racist. So we may end up with a Rotherham Grooving Gang type situation, but with, you know, intercouple marriage. And I just thought, you know, first cousin marriage. And I just thought, wow, what an interesting, fascinating 32-year-old guy, super brave. We don't share a faith, but he is British before he's a Muslim. You know, and that is, I found so inspiring. And I know that it upsets people, but I'm really up for opening the doors to talk to people like that. And I really want to support his work, because he says, if you can de-radicalize Islam, you can take out the extremists from Islam. You can also take out extremists from the woke left. You can also take out extremists from the far right. And I was like, well, what's the far right? And he said, people, we got into this very interesting conversation where he said, where we sort of agreed that the far right are very superficial. We're just like, if you're not the same color as me, you got to go. And the far left are very much ideological. So they go, if you don't agree with me, I want you out of here. So it was just really fascinating. He was a very brave, very gentle guy. I'm sure he's going to get a whole load of shit for spending time with me. And I just thought, amazing. And he was very scriptural. So I think you would have appreciated this. Like the way that he broke down passages in the Quran, which I was quoting to him because I, you know, my sort of limited knowledge. And he said, yeah, but if you look at it like this contextually, and I've heard Christians do this, and I like it. I didn't think it was universalism. I thought it was a mixture of literalism and interpretationalism. Do you know what I mean?
I'm skeptical.
No, yeah, no, of course you're skeptical, but that's the job of you and me.
Well, you said to me, was it on this podcast like a couple of weeks ago when Majid Nawaz was going crazy, once an extremist, always an extremist. I don't know if people are truly reformed in that way or rehabilitated. And I don't think you can de-radicalize Islam, because Islam is radical. It is extreme.
He admitted that, though.
I believe in that much, but not that much. I take that part, but not that part. I have the Quran, but I don't look at the hadiths. It's that. I don't know if that's I don't know if it's workable. I think that's just a bit of, I want my cake and eat it. When he left Islam, he got lost and wanted to cling on to something, but he had an identity in it, and it wants the identity, but without the faith. I don't think you can follow a religion without believing in it fully.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. I think that was an issue for the reformers in Christianity as well, you know, the Protestant reformers.
Yeah, which is a mess. Look at it.
Yeah, I God, the whole thing's a mess, and I get it. But what I was inspired by was the fact that he said, I would die for my country. And I just thought,
which country was that?
That's us, England, Britain. You know, he said, this is my country, I will live and die for it. He was very straightforward about the stuff. So I'm always, you know what I'm like, Nazi fascist that I am. I'm always trying to find somebody who can click into what I really think is an important thing to happen, which is that whether we like it or not, he was very open. He said, the minute you're at 10% or over with the Muslim population in a country, your country's finished. It's gone. Done. So he's very clear about that. He's like, you need to get rid of a load of people like that. But he also made a really good point about going, if you westernize Muslims, they'll stop having so many children. So,
what does that mean to westernize them?
Well, to remind people that you're not just having a load of children so that you can spread the word of the prophet.
But surely they are. Surely that's the whole point. If they're not doing they're unfaithful.
But is that not the duty of Christians too?
You know, absolutely. And this is why we're failing, because we're not doing that. Christians should be going forth and multiply. Christians should be having families, large families, not saying, I want two children, one boy, one girl. They should be saying, I hope to be blessed by God with children. And however many children God blesses me with, that's how many children I will raise. And remembering that the children belong to God and the parents are responsible for the children, but not the sole bearers of the children. All of that is Christian, but that most Christians aren't doing it in the West anymore. But I don't think the answer is making sure that the Mohammedans are doing it or aren't doing it in a certain amount. I just think Mohammedanism is incompatible with Christendom.
Yeah, so, but maybe the guy is on a journey and he hates woke people as much as he hates far-right extremists. And I would call Cain DeAndrews a far-right extremist. I would say he's a far-right extremist. He may be brown, but he's an ethno-nationalist, isn't he? He's Steve Laws, but brown. So I would say that it's useful to have that kind of conversation with someone like Sahail. And he's copped a shit ton of flack online for
meeting me. No, it's great that you have this conversation. This is what you started doing in the beginning when you first left acting, like having open conversations with people you disagree with or may not agree with entirely, but having conversations with them and finding out where they stand. But I think that's a good thing that you do. It's not something I'm bothered about, but I think it's great that you do it. Dan Wharton had an interview with I've forgotten his name now, a nasty Mohammedan the other day, and they tagged me saying, "Oh, I want to." The Mohammedan said, "I want to speak to Calvin Robinson next." So I searched up our Twitter. I don't think I've ever interacted with him, but there was a whole list of him trolling me for like the past 3 years. I'm like, actually, I don't want to sit down with you. I have no interest whatsoever in sitting down with a hostile, nasty Mohammedan. Like, get on with your own business, do it elsewhere. But I respect people that are able to do that and put it all that aside and have these conversations.
Yeah, I think it's if it's in good faith, I think that anything is possible. I share your skepticism that, and he did too, that there is any way that Islam and the West can combine.
Yeah.
So we agreed.
But then he's not really Mohammedan, is he? He kind of, I suppose, he needs good around him to introduce him to Christ is what he needs.
Yeah, I think that that is the position one gets to, which is that you do need to sort of say, well, you know, your curiosity is such that, you know, you are genuinely inclusive, which is a Christ-driven word, because we are all included, right? Regardless, we are all included. So I just found him very, very fascinating. What do you make of 9/11?
Non sequitur I've ever heard one. Oh, was it?
Well,
oh.
I'm just. I know.
Oh, you've got I see the connection. No, I see the connection now. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not that stupid, mate.
No, I wasn't accusing you of being stupid. It just sounded random. It's incredibly sad as this goes out. 9/11 would have been yesterday, and it's a great reminder of how quickly what we know and love can fall apart, and how we have to hold it dear. I don't know personally if it was down to the Mohammedans or if it was down to Western governments or it was a collusion of the two, or I don't really know the ins and outs of it. So I haven't dug down that rabbit hole, haven't deling-pulled this topic.
Well, it goes to show how distrustful we are of the media that we're given, especially in terms of the debate last night and all that sort of stuff, and they were fact-checking Trump and it was lies.
Yeah.
And one wonders whether I was watching the long-form conversation between Megyn Kelly and Sean Ryan, I think his name is, who's former Navy SEAL. And Megyn Kelly sits there for the best part of 3 hours and a feature-length conversation with a very, very smart human being. And I just go, wow. This has replaced the mainstream media.
Oh, yeah.
Long-form conversations between honest people. And
Megyn Kelly was livid about the debate, by the way. I don't know if you heard or saw
her. Yeah, I did.
Good content.
Well, I think that, but again, she invoked praise of cancel culture. She went, "I'm so pleased I was cancelled." And I suppose there's an element of that for all of us. Like, you know, I'm always hugely encouraged by the fact that you're just tough as a motherfucker, sorry to swear, but you are just so tough at dealing with this stuff, and you get through it and you work through it. And I think in my own way I do the same, and ultimately you end up grateful for for being cancelled. You know, so it's why we should always like sort of spend time bigging up the names of the people that we really like. And I really like that Dan Whitney is actually providing, he's sort of finding his way into this stuff, but he's providing a completely alternative voice to the mainstream media. And
actually, suffering is often sanctifying. And so in this industry in particular, we go through a journey of leaving what is a controlled narrative and getting freed to talk about what's important.
Yeah, what's important to you at the moment?
I'm just getting...
You don't like questions like this, do you?
No, it's fine. I'm just going to be about to be installed as a priest in a new church. So just building community, getting to know everyone, getting to know who knows Christ, and being that bridge, hopefully.
Are you being nurtured and looked after, and are people, you know, yeah. How's that beard coming along?
It's trying. Oh, I think maybe give it another week or so, because I'm just
a bit Mohammedan. Hang on, let me have a look.
Jihad.
Where's your where's that bit gone?
It's still the the camera that we're using right now isn't the best camera in the world.
All right, calm down.
Someone's going to send out a camera, and we'll have a better setup.
I am going to send out, actually, when Blessing's here and when we finished, I will ask him which one we can send out, because I'm sure there are three. There are. There's one there. You've left me, and...
come on over.
Tragic. I'm coming over. I'm speaking to Larry about when to come over, and he's like, good. Come over now. And I'm like, no, why don't I just come over for the election so we can do some election stuff and it can be fun and we can go and see stuff. And he's like, yeah, but we'll just end up tweeting about stuff all day and not talking. And so he does have a point about that.
Yeah, that is fair. But, go and chill with Larry and come by here on the way back.
So I know that we only have a short period of time. We've got 6 minutes left, right. Calv. What is your plan for the coming week?
So next week I get installed as the priest, and I'm also going to be popping on stage to do some closing prayers at a good mutual of ours who I will announce this week, but I'll announce next week. So doing bits and bobs out here, meeting lots of people. I've met a few other clergymen out here already and trying to get to know everyone in the congregation as well. But it's just being rooted in place is very important for me right here, right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I am going to... So I've had a busy day today. I've got a dinner with a friend who is a sort of advisor, mentor type friend. And then I'm going to go back to the countryside and I'm going to get away from this horrible, you know, this thing that Sadiq Khan goes on about, like London's air is dirty and all that sort of stuff. It's not. London's air is not dirty. You know what's dirty about London? Money and noise.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mohammedans. You and I were driving into London last week when you dropped me off, and you could almost feel the cloud of grey come over you, can't you, as you drive in. You kept pointing out, like, high rise. They're just building these rabbit hutches up so people are crammed on top of each other. It really is kind of dystopian, and it's happened so quickly.
Yeah, to convince someone to live in a battery hen cage, I think, for a load of money is one of the greatest tricks the devil could ever play. But we've got to talk about the 26th of October. So Tony is now committed to that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be outside Downing Street. And now I think that we're going to progress this into a movement. So we're going to say, this is what we pledge to do. This is what we are part of doing. It's five simple pledges. Yep. And I love the fact that the first one is to give hope and the last one is to resist tyranny. I just think it's so good. And what I want to do is I want to give people a human emblem of what they can be get behind. Because it can't all be about Tommy, bless him. Also, I had a very famous journalist turn around to me and say, why are you hanging around with that grifter? And I'm like, I don't hang around with Tommy, we'd talk and discuss things. And B, why are you? You're on. You agree about 99% of things.
I hate these accusations. He's like literally
not acceptable to you.
Anytime any of us have been around each other or together, it's all about being productive. It's all about how do we help our country and our countrymen? Like, it's very positive, active, proactive. I wish more people were doing that stuff that you, me, and Tommy and people are doing. If we had that, instead of people sitting in the background saying, "Oh, don't associate with that person. I'll give you a bad image." And who cares about your image? Who cares about your reputation? Get on with fixing what's good and what's true and what's beautiful. Like, care about your nation. Care about the world. Make it a better place, for God's sake. I'm sick of these people.
No, I'm so with you. I think your move is the best thing ever. Because I think you literally are in the land of opportunity.
Absolutely.
So you're in a place where you're not going to be held back or discriminated against because of your beliefs. You're going to find there's going to be a cohort and a constituency of people that really care what you think. Yeah. And I just think it's going to be so good for you, because I've watched you over the last few years since we've got to know each other and become friends. And I've just seen you isolated in this country. Oh. And I'm just like, it drives me insane. I'm just like, why don't you just like make him... Like, what? Why are all the organisations not coming in? So you've gone there, and I think you're gonna, by your fruits you shall know them. I think you're gonna do some amazing stuff.
You know, I've been here, this is my third day, right? I'm not even halfway through the third day. And I've had so many, like, I've had pro-life organizations, Christian organizations, conservative organizations get in touch, say, how can we make things happen? Let's do some work. Like, none of them are saying, oh, don't associate with that Lawrence Fox, or don't associate with that Tommy Robinson, or what about your image? What about, none of them are that superficial. They care about getting stuff done already. Like, 3 days, imagine how much we can get done in 3 years.
Yeah, well, if anyone can do it, you can do it, my friend.
Thank you,
even
brother.
Though I am still angry, and I'm going to shout at you every time we do a Fox and Father. But what's so good is that, I mean, it's sad that that chair's empty, but I'm smoking a cigar, which is good.
When I get my rectory sorted, I will smoke a pipe while we chat.
Well, also, I like the thing you sent through to us about the... those wingback chairs. I think we should probably talk about gold. And here is gold. Now, as we come to the end of the show, I did promise you that we had a new sponsor.
Yes.
Sponsoring the Fox and Father show, because apparently this company, Gold Bullion Partners, a few of our listeners have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they have come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too! but my gold's a little one.
Well, so the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank, and you can't rely on it, you can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah, non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
I wouldn't want to spend it, though.
No, I'm just saying.
A lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore, and that's part of the problem. That the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in the world. And in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know, Gold Bullion Partners, guys. Their link will be in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to...
Absolutely. Do your own research. Look into it.
Yeah. And we will carry on buying it ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
Calvin, where's the hope?
The hope is in each other. So our commandment is to love God and to love our neighbour as ourselves. And that means... of course, our first focus is on worship and praise and thanksgiving of God. But after that, it's to love each other and to find Christ in each other and to find the hope in each other and not looking inwards, looking outwards. And that's what love is. Love is a willing the good of the other. It's sacrificial. It's how can I help that person be better rather than how can I use that person to help myself be better. That's where the hope is. Stop being insular is the message.
So I was very moved by, obviously, a lot of people were talking about 9/11. And, you know, you're listening to these stories, these amazing stories of great and indomitable courage. But I was really moved by Gina Carano's post, which hasn't had a lot of engagement with it. Right. But she said, when I remember 9/11, I think of this verse and the selfless acts of brave men and women running into a burning building to save others during all the fear and panic in such a devastating moment. And the verse is John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends.
Yeah, and that's literally what God did for us.
What's that, sorry?
That's what God did for us.
Yeah, and the door is open, isn't it? Well, listen, I know you've got to run. So thank you for taking the time to talk to me for our brief first transatlantic Fox and Father. We will compensate our viewers by doing a longer one next
time. Yeah, we will.
And I miss you, and I'm glad I get to see your face, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. And I'm coming out to America. Me and Lizzie are going to come out, so we'll see you, and we'll come and visit the church.
But we should get Lizzie on the show as well.
What, Lizzie?
Yes.
Sorry, but even she says this. She's like, you can't let me speak in public. Like, I didn't even send her the Mel B afros should be a protected characteristic thing. Did you see that today?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so Mel B's saying that afro hair should be a protected characteristic in the Equality Act. If I sent that to Lizzie, she would just go off on a rant about it. She, like all amazing people who are not white and who have curly hair, is just like, what's my hair got to do with fucking anything?
I know.
What's my hair got to do with anything? It's like, because the next question is, oi, stop straightening your hair, Beyonce. Right. That's what white people got straight hair. It's like, it's so divisive.
So let's end with the question. Should I grow the afro back when I get rid of the beard?
Wait, you're not getting rid of the beard?
I am. I'm going to give it another week. It's getting on my nerves now.
Hang on a minute. You started growing this beard in Greece.
Yeah. Yes.
So, excuse me, you've got to give it some room. No, I mean this. If I see you next week, I'm going to be angry. The afro has got to come back. I mean, it's like, this is what I say to Lizzie all the time when she does a sort of wavy thing with her hair. I'm like, why would you turn curly, wonderful, amazing hair into something like that? Because it's like, I wish I had curly, amazing hair that grew out like this. Like, I wish for it, but I don't have like lank, posh boy, Anglo-Saxon hair.
Hey, it's just how my hair happens to grow. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with your posh boy hair. I've got to go, but good to see you, brother.
I love you, man.
You too.
God bless.